Welcome to It's All Recruiting, the show that looks at everything through the lens of recruiting. I'm your host, Jim Stroud.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages. Welcome for another action-packed episode of It's All Recruiting Podcast. I'm your host with the most, Jim Stroud. Now, if you would, dear listener, I want you to just go back. Go back to when you were a child, let's say 8 or 9 years old, and it's Christmas Eve, and you wake up, and you're like so excited, Christmas is coming, I'm going to get presents, I'm going to get gifts. Well, if you can remember that feeling, you know how recruiters all over the world and HR leaders feel when the new source of hire report comes out from Career Crossroads. Yes, people, it's time. A new report has come out. And I'm so excited to learn all the new and exciting, wonderful insights that this report will bring. Here to tell us all about it is my special guest. Special guest, please introduce yourself.
Well, hi there, Jim. I love that intro. And yes, I do look a little bit like Santa Claus. So that's probably the only thing that's related to this, my source of hire. So I'm a lifelong student of recruiting. I've been studying weird things around recruiting ever since I was a knee-high to the grasshopper or whatever the hell they do talk about. And that means a lot of years. And in fact, for 15 years, each year I collect data from large companies, typically that ranges around 300,000-400,000 hires. But they're all large companies, so they're all hiring, you know, 5,000 to 10,000 people. And it's more anecdotal. It's more of a lab report. It was never, ever, ever intended to accurately reflect and represent a source of hire. But hopefully I intended it for it to be stimulating other companies that had more data, perhaps to actually do a better job. And in that sense, it's been a total failure because there's no improvement in the space in looking at source of hire in the last 15 years.
Really?
Yeah, really. I started this. Really, there was a guy named Clough. From way back when in Employment Management Association, he used to do that in the 80s and 90s. And he'd collect from about 120 companies, and that would be published. And then EMA went away. And so about 2001, Mark and I, as part of Career Crossroads, said, you know, we've got so many friends and people that we know. Why don't we ask them to give us some data and see the extent to which the internet is impacting hiring? That was 2001. And believe it or not, it demonstrated that, yes, the internet was now becoming dominant. Mm-hmm. And obviously, we began, you know, breaking that up into, again, what kinds of sources are being attributed to recruiting and to the hiring process. And what we discovered is that people are all over the lot. There's no common definition. Never has been, and it looks like never will. About the most strict definition that there is, believe it or not, you want to guess, Jim? What source has the strictest definition that is probably most common among companies?
Oh, that's probably employee referrals.
Yeah, you're right on. And even there, it's a problem because about a third of the companies incorporate other things besides employees in their referral attribution. And then, of course, if you think about a sourcer who asks an employee about someone he or she might know in another company, then goes cold calls them, engages them, makes a connection, and eventually they come in, are interviewed and hired, who gets credit?
Ah, that's
to your point, yeah.
Yeah, well, the source is going to get credit, and right. the employee is not going to get any money. So even there, you got all kinds of issues in terms of how clearly that's organized, how it's attributed or not attributed. Hmm. And that brings up the other major issue that's taken place in the last 20 years, and that is you could assume 20, 30 years ago that every source was relatively independent. So, for example, somebody could walk into an office, fill out an application, hand it to the secretary, if you will, and that was defined as a walk-in.
Mm-hmm.
And at best, you could connect data that showed that walk-ins tended to occur right after a newspaper was printed on Sunday. You know, so walk-ins tended to be the first, you know, couple days, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Today, however, how do you sort all of the different sources that we attribute from one another? You really can't. And you could take some examples like LinkedIn. How do you attribute a hire to LinkedIn? Do you attribute it as a job board because you can post your jobs on LinkedIn directly, right? Do you attribute it to sourcing because the sourcer could be using LinkedIn to search for people with a certain background based upon the seat that they have, right?
Hmm. Yep.
You could, and we can go on and on. So the point is, how do you break that out or compare apples and apples? And the problem is you really, really can't because there is no standard and there are no definitions in relation to that. So I love the arguments when I come out with, the source of hire report. I love it when suddenly you get a bunch of other source of hire reports in which they talk about this silver bullet of measuring the IP address.
Okay.
So that's pretty cool. Except imagine what the IP address is. If I went on, let's say I went on Indeed. Let's say I went to Google and I typed in I want to look for accounting jobs in pharmaceutical companies in New Jersey, and that brought me to Indeed, which told me what job boards some of this might be on, among other things. And then you know what? I stop at that point. I've made a list of a couple cool companies, and one of them, let's say, was J&J, and I realized that in my development across the street is a guy who works at J&J, and I walk across the street, and I ask him, John. I said, John, this is cool. I see there's an opening just for a person like me over at your company. He goes, oh, yeah, sure, you'd be great. Yeah, you put me down as a referral. In fact, here, give me your resume so that I can make sure I indicate that you're my referral. And then you go back to your house and on another computer, because you had looked on, you know, using your cell phone, but you go up to your desktop this time and you go directly to J&J. You look at your notes and you open up that particular job and you apply. What does the IP address say? The IP address is going to have other. But what's going to get attributed, by the way? In the end, because the ATSs will only allow a single attribution for source of hire, it's going to be the employee referral.
That's a real head scratch. So I see your point. It's like you can't really say one thing or another, because it could be a combination of things. So is it better
to say?
Of course,
but there are statisticians today. Mm-hmm. There's this thing called big data.
Right.
We could, if we had this journey that this guy went on to get this job, and we could look at the factors that had played a role, you would move some of your money perhaps to keywords on Google.
Okay.
You might also put some time and effort onto your career site in identifying what schools the bulk of your employees come from, what communities they live in, what associations they belong to, a variety of things that might help a candidate or prospective candidate track down someone that he should know but isn't actually connected to on LinkedIn or other places, so that he could initiate a conversation with someone that he knows who might offer to be an employee referral.
Would it then be advantageous to maybe track source of traffic?
Yeah.
So if I say, okay, our career site.
Those are things. I mean, I would want, if I were doing this, I would want to know where was the last place they were before they applied. But I'd also want to know where was the first place they went. And if the first place was their action, or whether it was an action prompted by a third party, like a sourcer.
Mm-hmm.
Or an employee. Right? So the point is, here's the point. My source of hire report is merely a lab report looking at some of the flaws and problems that 2,500 recruiters have each year, trying to figure out where people came from so that they could conceivably be more productive and more efficient in terms of how they move their money to different places. And the problem is, bottom line, is that we have not improved our ability to collect. And if you ask yourself, well, why haven't the vendors, suppliers, and others who build applications done a better job in making these tools more easily used to track people or engage that data and organize the data so it could be used for decisions, it's because they don't have any incentive to do so. It would perhaps imply that people are not necessarily coming from where the vendors and other suppliers are saying they are, and that's what I would maintain. I think there's a lot of misdirection going on in our space right now, and the bottom line is garbage in equals garbage out. And so we're not able to become more efficient by tracking the supply chain journey that prospects are on before they get to us.
Interesting. And speaking of prospect journey, one thing I noticed in your report that is different, or maybe it's just I just had noticed it in previous reports, but you're paying attention to internal movement versus external hires. Is that new to your report? Cause I don't remember seeing that in the last report.
Nope, it's almost in every single report. And what I then do is separate out the data. So it's usually right in the beginning. If you go back, and again, I've got about 15 of these, you'll find in the beginning that you would split the hires. Or the openings filled between those that are filled with your own people and those that are filled from without, right? Mm-hmm. And that would be the difference between external and internal. And that, I think, is a pretty common, issue. I think that what we've seen is other source of hire reports attempt to change that language and ignore, because they're not tracking, by the way, ignore what's going on internal to the corporation. But any talent acquisition leader should be really thinking about to what extent do we really rely on internal movement and promotion as a means for engaging, for filling positions. And if that is so, one would suggest that that's a good rationale for a lot more collaboration between the development side of talent management and the talent acquisition side of talent management. Because now we would want to potentially look at some job families in terms of the extent to which we can hire them for not the job they're going to go into, but assuming that they go into it and are successful for the next level job. And we can also measure our performance, if you will, on the extent to which we get people that we hire ready for that job, if that was the goal. So there's some tremendous opportunity for looking at this issue of the 40% of our openings on average that we fill each year through our own from our own people. And if we're more than 40%, we got to start asking ourselves, well, you know, what is the right percentage of openings that we should be filling from internal sources versus external? You can imagine that at 100%, you are not bringing in a lot of new thinking. And at 0%, you're probably driving employees away and losing the potential for them even to refer others as well.
Wouldn't it also speak, though, to how well a company is retaining their talent? I know retention is a huge issue for a lot of companies.
So yeah, it is. I would think that it would you would see some very significant issues relative to retention if you are not at about a 40% level. But one of the other factors that one learns from, you know, HR and OD, not so much from talent acquisition, is that if you are not transparent inside your corporation and sharing with your employees, especially those who are highly prized, that they are, in fact, highly prized on some regular basis, then you actually will drive higher turnover. So it's not just a matter of the retaining is not just a matter of having openings and filling them with your own people. It's marketing that to them that you are, in fact, doing that and that you are individually have the management skills to tell them appropriately that they're, you know, that they are being set up for a new job or not. And those skills are, you know, they're trainable, but a lot of companies miss that.
Sure, sure.
One of the companies out there, Enterprise, they've been a multiple year winner of the Candidate Experience Awards. And one of the criticisms that prospects had of Enterprise is that, you know, they come in almost everybody's hired into one specific job. They work hard to learn the business of what Enterprise does, and then they have opportunities to grow and be promoted and all of that kind of stuff. And they have a fairly high turnover in the first year to 2 years when people realize that this isn't what they want to do with their life. A lot of them come in from college. They hire about 9,000, 10,000 people a year from college. So that's a big issue is, does Enterprise really promote and develop their people? And so one of the things they've done this year on their career site is put a promotion or promotion indicator on their career site. So every time somebody is promoted within Enterprise, there's sort of like a bell ringing. There's a tracking so that actually candidates looking to potentially apply to Enterprise can see for themselves, as opposed to hearing somebody claim that they develop their people, can see the extent to which they actually are developing their people. And that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I've never heard of anyone doing that before.
Me neither. I think it's one of the first, you know, when you think about sales involves one interesting piece. It's called proof statement, right? And it's a demonstration that what you claim is in fact true. And so I think we need a few more, quote, proof statements in our career sites that help to support those common claims we all see every company seems to have. You know, that we're family friendly, that we are that we develop our people, that we actually pay people at a market rate. There's a whole bunch of stuff. And they're all claims. Nobody is sharing or not sharing enough the proof of that claim.
What to switch gears a little bit, what percentage of companies do you think overall are spending quality time trying to recruit former employees, the boomerangs, as I call them?
Oh, interesting. I expanded on the source of hire and asked a couple thousand people to share referral data.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things that I'm looking at is the extent to which they go after their alumni or attract their alumni. So if you think about it, it would be very, very hard to do anything but casually hire boomerangs if in fact, you don't track them and ask them for referrals, for example, and keep in touch in a variety of different ways. And only about 7% of companies are doing anything with their alumni. So boomerangs tend to be a fairly small percentage. And in the source of hire report that I published that we're referring to, and I know you're going to put up a link, I guess, to it at some point.
Oh, yeah, definitely will.
By the way, it's been downloaded or viewed about 4,000 times in the week that it's been up.
Christmas time.
Yeah. And now it's going to double that with this podcast, right? No big deal. It's free. Nobody's buying anything here. Weighted average is 6.5%. So the answer is, what percent of your hires were former employees? Something, in that range is probably relatively accurate. I think it's more important to say, that most companies, half the companies are really kind of less than that. So that weighted average tells you that there's a lot of companies getting almost nothing. And then at various points, there's a bunch of companies getting anywhere from like 5 to 20% of their hires coming from former employees. And a large company that, let's say, really focuses in on that can move that entire weighted average up a little bit. If you just hire... if some company is hiring 10,000 people a year and 8,000 of them are former employees, that's gonna pump that entire calculation. So I think it's more important to know distribution, which is what I showed in the source of hire, and my distribution shows that about almost 50% of all the companies that responded higher between 1% and 5%.
Huh. Do you think that
there's a great opportunity there for most companies? Is the point?
Yeah, I was going to say that. Do you think it's partly because companies don't know how to reengage their boomerangs, or they feel like they don't want them anymore? That's why they were gone in the first place.
You know what?
Or they just don't know how to engage. Or what do you think it is,
Jim? It's about strategy. The issue. First and foremost is, do you sit down on a regular basis with all of your, talent acquisition leaders and sit there and go, what are the opportunities that we're missing? And there's a huge, talent acquisition is loaded with extraordinary opportunities for raising the bar for yourself in terms of where you're truly, truly not getting good value. And I would absolutely agree that former employees is one of them, particularly if you have a development process, a talent management process that allows for former employees to leave well. Right? So So if you celebrate, you know, the opportunity that an employee has to go somewhere else,
mm-hmm.
and not all companies do that, you probably can maintain a relationship with them that's positive and that helps them feed you either by coming back at some point, or in financial services, you don't necessarily want the former employee to come back, right? But you want that former employee to send you names of all of the cool people that could come to you. So if I'm in financial services and an employee goes to another company that now uses my company as a consultant, you don't really want them back because your corporation is actually making money off of alumni. On the other hand, some of those alumni have these cool interns or young folks who are working for them who need to get developed by going to a financial services firm. So it's context, right? So
it's
not only opportunity, it's the context of that opportunity in how you use it. Do you want to have great relationships with former employees? Yes, you do, with most of them. You want to know ahead of time whether or not an employee, if they were to leave, would be a regrettable loss, as opposed to, I can't wait for them to quit. Those individuals, you may not want their referrals, and you may not want them back.
Right.
So, you know, you need to have a process by which people can fairly, and I do mean fairly, do this in the talent management space, and then obviously you want to make best use of it. I mean, think about it. If you're a sourcer, one of the cool things would be to look at target companies and identify the names of people in those target companies who used to work for you and still are very loyal to you from a negative point of view, but from a positive point of view, and would happily recommend referring people in their company who are good performers, but who don't fit their culture where they are now, but might fit the culture of the company they came from.
Very good idea indeed. One other question, because I see the clock is ticking there. It's long been debated that job boards are dead, but they're still here. Is there anything in your research that suggests that job boards may be dying out finally, or?
I can only predict with 100% accuracy that we will consistently say year after year that job boards are going to die. I had a panel at HR Technology more than five years ago, to address the issue of are job boards dead? And the answer is no. They're not. And, you know, there needs to be some place in the universe where jobs are listed that are open in a way that people can access them. And before the internet, it was called the classified section of a newspaper. And is a company bound to do that? Yeah, they are for a lot of their jobs. And is that sufficient? For a lot of jobs, surprisingly, it is. And for some smaller percentage of those jobs, not at all. If you put a full page ad in a newspaper or on a website looking for critical care nurse, it's highly unlikely you're going to get a flood of resumes afterwards. So job boards work for some things and they don't work for other things. And we just need to get over it that there's going to be some silver bullet source that will solve every single situation. It just isn't going to happen.
It has been my pleasure to chat here with Jared Crispin of Career Crossroads, the godfather of HR, as we call him in the industry. Thank you, sir. Thank you, Godfather, for being on the It's All Recruiting podcast.
Thank you so much, Jim.
Thank you so much for listening. If you were not there, then I would be here talking to myself. So thank you for that. If you would, check out the links in the podcast description because they are there for you. Finally, if you love what you heard, hate what you heard, or not quite sure what you just heard, I want to know about it. Connect with me on Twitter at Jim Stroud or LinkedIn or Google Plus or pretty much anywhere you find me online. I'm everywhere, everywhere. Okay, enough of that. Until next time, one last word spoken three times to my people at Randstad Sourceright. Love, love, love.